In this exclusive interview with the Vancouver Media Co-op, author Derek Jensen talks about a recent spate of death threats directed towards him. He explains his decision to go to the FBI and expresses his distaste for those who question his decision to go to the feds.
They threatened to fucking cut off my genitals, and they threatened to fucking torture me. And you're questioning me as to what response I had? It's like, Jesus Christ, what about some victim solidarity, you know?
The interview was conducted by phone yesterday by Don Paley for the Vancouver Media Co-op and has been minimally edited for sound quality and length.
Vancouver.mediacoop.ca.
I'm wondering if you can talk about the context for the threats you've been receiving and just kind of take us along what's been going on over, I don't even know how long it's been going on for, but I'm assuming over the past month or so in terms of, you know, what catalyzed it and what's transpired.
Well, there was an interview on Alternate of Eric Lear and I about Deep Green Resistance. And the interview has gotten a lot of attention to the book, and that's good. But there was one thing about it that bothered me some, which is at one point the interviewer said, so... there's a line that just really made me stop and read it twice to make sure I was reading it correctly, which is a line where I said that I thought that everyone associated with the Gulf oil spill should be executed. And I didn't say murdered, by the way, not assassinated. I said executed, which means by the state. And the thing that bothered me about this is that she freaked out at that line, but she didn't freak out at the notion of BP and those who run it getting away with murdering the Gulf and 11 human beings at least. And, you know, the whole book is about the planet's being killed, yet the one time that we mention offhand, or I mention offhand, then the person gets upset. And anyway, so that the interview came out. And the interview was very fair. I mean, I really liked how she wrote it up. I really liked, and I then explained to her what I meant by that. The point I'm getting at with that is there is no corporate accountability. And why is it that, and two of the jokes I've told forever are, question, this is not very funny, question, what do you get when you cross a long drug habit, a quick temper, and a gun? Answer, two life terms for murder, earliest release date 2026. Question, what do you get when you cross two nation states, a large corporation, 40 tons of poison, at least 8,000 dead human beings? And the answer is retirement with full pay and benefits. And that's Warren Anderson, CEO of Union Carbide, and who's wanted for murder in India, and the United States won't extradite him. And so that's one example. Another example that I use about this is, what do you call somebody who puts sarin gas in the subways of Tokyo and wants to put cyanide in the subways of Tokyo? Why do you call them terrorists? You put them in prison for the rest of their life, of course. I mean, they got no problem with that. And on the other hand, what do you call somebody who puts cyanide into drinking water and groundwater? And the answer is, you call them somebody who works for a mining company, because gold mining uses cyanide heat bleaching, and the cyanide gets into the water. So why is it that, what I was getting at is that if you do something in the name of a corporation, you can kill with impunity. And that's the point I was getting at. Okay, so now here's where we start to get to the death threats. Is that, so this got picked up by the right wing. And they are, you know, sort of the Glenn Beck, it was on Glenn Beck's website. And then it just spread, it went sort of viral with all sorts of right wingers taking this out of context and sending me notes like, oh, so you want to execute me? I was like, first off, I don't want to execute anybody. You know, what I'm talking about is communal accountability. You know, that should be the community's responsibility. If you don't stop a sociopath in your community, then the sociopaths are going to do what sociopaths do, as we see. They're going to become CEOs and presidents. Like, years ago, I got an email from this this policeman saying that he thought that I was too hard on police in Endgame. And I don't really attack police in Endgame, but we'll leave that aside. And He said, the job of the police is to protect us from sociopaths. And I wrote back to him, and I said, you know, I don't disagree with you at all. And, you know, a lot of anarchists freak out at the notion of a police force, but they don't even know their own history, because the Spanish anarchists, one of the first things they would do was institute police forces to protect people. I mean, sociopaths exist. And, you know, you need to protect people from sociopaths. So they would have groups who would go around and defend people from just people who are just nasty. Anyway, so I wrote to the cop, and I said, look, I got no problems with yeah, I know that police represent the state. That's a whole other topic we can talk about. But anyway, I went to this police officer and I said, you know, I got no problem with police protecting us from sociopaths. My main problem is that the police protect us from poor sociopaths and they don't protect us from rich sociopaths. Why don't the police protect us from those who are poisoning the planet? Why don't the police protect us? It's like I did this benefit years ago for a community down in New Mexico, made up of people of color, poor people, who were trying to keep this toxic waste dump from going in their community. And the of course, toxic waste was coming from elsewhere, and it was being brought in at the dictates of distant state government and corporations. And they were protesting it, and they were getting arrested by the police for doing the protesting. And we had this conversation where we said, what would happen if instead of the police trying to enforce the dictates of the distant corporations and distant government entities and distant rich people of one sort or another, what would happen if the police instead were helping to protect cancer-free zones where we're not going to allow toxics in our community? What if the police were actually protecting the community instead of protecting the interests of the distant economic interests? And they and of course we all laughed because it's absurd, because it's not what cops do. And then and then we all started talking about, well, what would happen if we in our communities set up our community police forces to protect, to make it so there's cancer-free zones, dam-free zones, clear-cut-free zones? What if we in our communities set up organizations, community police forces, to enforce rape-free zones, for crying out loud? And, you know, what's that look like? Well, what that looks like is revolution. Anyway, so I wrote to this cop, and I said, but, you know, I got no problem with protecting some poor sociopaths. You don't protect some rich sociopaths. And why is it whenever there's a strike, the cops always come in and they smash the heads of the strikers in order to bring them to terms? Why don't the cops come in and smash the heads of the capitalists to bring them to terms? And, of course, the cop never wrote back. And so, anyway, the right wing has been, as soon as this came up, you know, right wingers all over, there have been headlines, you know, progressives want to assassinate us. And it's like, I don't respond to any of this, but it's like, I want to write, and it's like, can't you even fucking read? I mean, I didn't say that, but it doesn't really matter. And the real point, and a lot of the death threats have been really vile. There was one about they want to castrate me, and, you know, and they sent a picture of a castration. So one of the upshots of this is I've been talking to various writer friends who are, you know, sort of lefty public figures of one sort or another. And like one guy who's a Iraq War veteran for peace. And, you know, I just had not had the roving eye of Sauron fall on me in this way before. And so I just was not really prepared for this. But it ends up that death threats are really standard. This is absolutely standard. That the, like Iraq War veteran for peace, that as soon as he speaks out against the war, bingo, you know, death threats. And one writer I was talking to, a pretty famous writer, spoke out against the Iraq war, and immediately there were death threats against him and his children. And other people have had, another writer who said some stuff about Glenn Beck. He didn't say no threats or anything. He just said, you know, Glenn Beck, he's got some problems with Glenn Beck. Immediate, on his home answering machine, death threats about him and his children. And it's just an absolutely standard thing. So I was talking to one writer about this, and, you know, I wrote about this really in Culture Make-Believe, and this is what is going to happen more and more as we see ecological and economic collapse, that this is a standard trope among... So I've got a proposal at my agent right now for a book called Death Squad America that will be about how death threats are a standard trope among the right wing, and it's also it's getting worse, and it will get worse as economic conditions as the economy continues to collapse. This is And the, some of the things I'm pretty interested in are the role. Well, a couple, back up a little bit. I mean, last week, I mean, just as I was writing this proposal, Texas Governor Perry, and presidential candidate, he threatened the head of the Federal Reserve with violence. He said, you know, we know how to treat people like that down in Texas, and if he came down here, we'd treat him pretty rough. And there's this horrible, horrible thing. And okay, well, we'll go on with that for a second. Then the next day, Senator Tom Coburn, Republican from Oklahoma, he says it's a good thing I'm not allowed to pack guns on the floor of the Senate. So he's implicitly threatening violence. This is a standard. I mean, how often do you see Bernie Sanders do this? You know, how often does the left wing sort of do this? Not very often. And so that's something I really want to explore, is why is this and how is this? And what's the role of the media in it? You know, what's the role of Glenn Beck in fomenting this? What's the role of Ann Coulter in fomenting this? Because there have been, you know, a fair number of murders that have been actually catalyzed by this violent rhetoric by the far right. And that's another thing that I'll explore, is what's the difference between left-wing rhetoric of violence and right-wing rhetoric of violence? And one of the ways I'll explore that, I mean, of course, I'm not saying that violence is never an appropriate response to oppression, but what's the numerical relationship, for example, between the number of African-Americans killed between 1870 and 1900 through lynching, so politically motivated murders, as opposed to the number of white people in those same states killed by politically motivated murders by black people. So, and you can even include self-defense, you know. There were thousands and tens of thousands of lynchings in the South through those decades. And, you know, how many white people were killed by blacks, even in self-defense? Not very many. And I would want to do the research on that. But so that's sort of the somewhat quick and dirty exploration of what's been happening with this.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit more about the threats themselves? Like, have they been by email, by phone? How many threats did you receive? And then also, does it feel like the work of a bunch of scattered individuals, or does it feel like something a little bit more coordinated?
Some have been by email, and a lot of them have been on forums, like Glenn Beck's forum and then other forums. And there have been... they've been very explicit. You know, they've been calling for people to hire snipers to kill me. They've been calling for people to shoot, shovel, and shut up. I'd like to introduce him to my 12-gauge. You know, just explicit. And that's another thing that's really sort of cracked me up about this. I called the FBI, and I also talked to the local police, and the FBI completely blew me off. And I talked to local police. They made sympathetic noises, but they said that this is not actionable at this point. And the thing that cracks me up about this is, you know, the same day that this is happening, there's this big thing about how David Letterman received a death threat on a Muslim extremist website. And there's a line by the FBI guy, because we take every death threat very seriously. So I haven't called them back, but I am going to call them back, and I'm going to use this for the book. It's like, okay, so you take every death threat very seriously, but can you tell me why they wouldn't even take my name? So why is David Letterman, and also the people who do South Park, evidently they got some death threats a while ago, and the person who did them got sentenced to 25 years in prison. So it's like, okay, so is my life worth one-tenth that of the people who do South Park? Can you at least give them 2.5 years? Maybe my life's worth 1%. You can at least put them in prison for 2 days, you know? It's like, I know the math's wrong, but it doesn't matter. So I just think that's really interesting. Why are some death threats taken seriously and why are some not? And, of course, one reason that the one against Letterman was taken seriously is because it fits with U.S. policy. It was done by Muslim extremists as opposed to right-wing extremists. Anyway, so the death threats have been primarily through, some have been through email and some have been through web forums. And the I don't believe that it's organized. I believe that it's, and one reason I don't believe it's organized is because of what I've heard from some of these other people I've talked to, that once again, this is like the knee-jerk reaction. You know, I'm guessing that a lot of the people who made the death threats against me, you know, 2 weeks ago they were making a death threat against you know, whomever came to their attention that week. I mean, it's, and another part, I guess I'll have to think about for the book that I write on this is that it's, you know, this is really a crazy culture in so many ways, as I've written about in many books. But one of the ways is I've read that a lot of sports players get death threats. You know, it's like they strike out in a big game or something and they get death threats. It's a crazy response. It's like I was friends with a member of a fairly big band, and they got in an accident, and they got all sorts of notes from people saying, "Too bad you didn't die." And I mean, they're a band, you know. It's like, how can you get mad at the band? And so there's that craziness. And so back to the original point, no, I don't believe that it's organized.
Okay.
I believe that this is just what some people do.
Okay. I'm wondering if we could come back just for a moment to your decision to call the FBI. Was that something that you reflected upon for quite a while, or was it sort of an instinctive thing? And just how did you come to that decision, and how do you feel about it?
Oh, it's fine. I came to that decision because I want a paper trail of the threats. In no way did I expect either the FBI or the local police to do anything. I want it, and this is one reason it was unsatisfying with the FBI. I didn't get a paper trail because they didn't, like I said, they didn't even ask my name. But the reason I want to do this is a paper trail so that if, A, something happens to me, we know, which is really no solace to me, but B, also so that if at some point I have to defend myself, this is not coming out of the blue. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay, let's take forward a scenario. Let's say somebody does come to my house and attempts to kill me. And let's say I fight back. And let's say I hurt the person or I kill the person. If there is no paper trail of me having presented to various people that I have receiving threats, the way this could play out legally at that point could be quite different than if I have left a trail saying, I mean, just imagine a trial. It's like, were you afraid for your life? Yeah. How do you know? I mean, how does anybody know that you're actually afraid for your life, that you actually had reason to fear if somebody walks up to your house? Well, because I made these reports. So yeah, I was once again not expecting them to do anything. And besides which, there's another thing, you know, there is this antipathy among certain groups of, especially anarchists, they say you should never call the cops under any circumstances. And I think that's kind of crap, because I was talking to a friend of mine about this a few years ago, because his place got robbed. It was armed robbery, and they pistol-whipped his female roommate. And this friend of mine is a radical sociologist who writes a lot about police brutality. And the first thing they did is chase the people away. But the second thing they did is, as the people were running away, they called 911. And actually the people got caught. And I was teasing my friend, radical sociologist, who writes about the social effects of the social control by police. I was saying, ha, 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 you know, you call the cops, Mr. Hypocrite. And he said, look, let them do their fucking job. You know, we hear all the time that police are there to protect us. But we really know that the most of what police do is actually this sort of some sort of protection. The most important function they do is to protect the property of the rich and to protect to maintain the social order, to maintain capitalism. That's the most important thing they do. This I got to find from Christian Perrini, that most of what they do is basically just, you know, getting kittens out of trees or whatever the hell they do. But the most important function is maintaining capitalism. But that's not the point. The point is that if there is, in this case, it was meth addicts. If there are meth addicts who are coming in and pistol whipping your roommate, I mean, it's just a position of extreme privilege. Also, once again, the anarchists don't even know their own history if they say don't call the cops, because the Spanish anarchists set up police patrols. That's one of the first things they did. Every community has had ways to deal with. I asked my friend Waz, who's a Dakota person. I said, what would happen to people who, among the Dakota, what did you do to people who committed antisocial acts? And she said, well, at first you talk to them, and then if that doesn't work, then you burn their teepee, and you destroy their weapons, and you basically reduce them to utter beggary. If that doesn't work, then you exile them.
I am just wondering about, you know, you talked about this sort of Spanish Civil War and anarchists and various different groups of people having their own sort of community security force or community police force. I guess I just would like to explore that idea with you in terms of conflating the idea of calling the police, you know, being against...
Are you kidding me? I'm serious. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Have you ever... If you were sexually assaulted, would you call the cops?
I'm not kidding you. I just like to explore it. I think you're making, you know, an interesting point here, and I'm not trying to insult you.
This really makes me angry because there's this hyper purity among so many anarchists that is, I mean, okay, wait a second. Somebody has been sending me notes saying that they want to castrate me. And they've been sending me notes saying that they want to hang me. They want to torture me. They want to beat me to death. And look, okay, so if a bunch of anarchists want to protect me, great. But you know what? I have been fucking attacked by the anarchists. I haven't seen any solidarity from the anarchist community. Okay, so this is great. You know, Lier got assaulted by anarchists, and other anarchists were applauding this. And she got vilified for going to the cops. Okay, great. You want to protect her? Great, protect her. But if you're not going to fucking protect her, don't fucking complain when she goes for protection somewhere. This is so crazy. I mean, once again, my radical sociologist friend, what the hell are you going to do when somebody pistol whips his roommate? Oh, let's call him the anarchist. What's John Zerzan going to do about this? What he's going to do if he heard about it is he would complain that my friend went to the cops. It's fucking crazy. We use the tools available to us. I have a friend who has argued, she's an attorney, and she has argued before the state Supreme Court in California, and she has protected more land than anybody else I know. And she does this using the tools of the system. This is not to say that we should always use the tools of the system. What this is to say is that we should care more about what really happens than about a sense of purity. I find this incredibly, I mean, I fully recognize that, okay, let's play this out in the trial. So this guy says he's going to castrate me, okay? This guy says he's going to torture me. Somebody else says he wants to hire snipers. Somebody else says he wants to kill me and bury me in the woods. Okay, great. So I tell my anarchist friends who don't do shit, okay, later on something happens. I fight for my life and I kill somebody, say. I kill somebody who's trying to kill me. It goes to court. Okay, so great. So Derek, did you take any steps to protect yourself? Yeah, I told my anarchist friends. And what? I mean, I have no problem with, you know, it's like, I wish that I knew some people like Elizabeth Salander from the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. I wish I knew some people like that to make some people's lives miserable. But I don't know people like that. So we use the tools that are available to us to protect us. And really, the reason I'm responding like this is like, they threatened to fucking cut off my genitals. And they threatened to fucking torture me. And you're questioning me as to what response I had? It's like, Jesus Christ, what about some victim solidarity, you know? It's like, I gotta tell you, any woman who is raped, I don't give a shit what response she has. She can do whatever she wants. If she wants to go to the cops, great. If she doesn't want to go to the cops, great. Because she is the fucking victim, and I identify with her. I do not identify with the fucking anarchists who tell her not to go to the police. If you're a victim, you get to do whatever is appropriate. You get to defend yourself using whatever tools you have. And if that tool is a gun, you get to use it. If that tool is a cop, you get to use it. If that tool is the law system, you get to use it. If that tool is a book, you get to use it. If that tool is silence, you get to use it. If that tool is meditation, you get to use it. If you're a victim, you get to use whatever tools you have.